Na dumela Abusheni. Today is someone's birthday. Someone's birthday today, and she's turning 20. We just want to start our meeting by wishing her a very happy birthday. We hope she grows. What's her hand, Sophie? You are assisting the chair? Okay. Yeah. We hope you grow and experience many more years to come. And we can see you're still very... Actually, you're the last born of this committee. Huh? Oh, Kado, yes. Go back to Mgwen. Yes. So, we hope that you'll grow and be like us. Yes. Get wisdom from us. Don't tire from getting that wisdom. I'm saying us because we are beyond that age, you know, which age. And Utholu Guti. Yeah. That's her slang, Utholu Guti. So, yeah, all the best, my love, for the day and for the year ahead. I don't know if you want to sing for her. Bofu no mtula la babaka.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Cake today by the before the end of the day. Sugar free. Oh, okay. We might get a sugar free cake. Today is another day where we're considering the annual report and the financial audited financial statement for IDC. We are told one of your auditors is KPMG. Yes. So we're not going to say anything, but we're just saying it now, that we are told that one of your auditors is. Maybe you'll explain later what's going on. What are you going to do about it? Or you are not going to be influenced by what's happening in the market. IDC, as usual, would want to welcome you. Chairperson, Mage Mabuza, together with your entourage, you are mostly welcome. And we've read, we had the good news, but we're hoping that you're going to tell us more good news as you present to us. This is your committee. As usual, we are not here to find faults, but we are here to ensure that we work together to transform the lives of our people through, and also to grow the economy, because if you grow the economy, then people's lives get transformed. Because we are able to create jobs, we are able also to alleviate or even just do away with poverty. Unfortunately, we are living in times, very hard times, where people really are struggling to make ends meet because our economy is not cooling well. So today we have people who are responsible for making industries perform in the country. And we want to hear what exactly are you doing to ensure that that happens. We want to see our situation improving. As the committee, we had an opportunity to visit some of black industrialists that you're funding, and we were very impressed by the work that they're doing and the work that you are doing as IDC. The details are in what you're going to be telling us. But so far, we want to thank you for once more honoring our invitation and your responsibility of accounting to us. And we hope that even today will go well as usual. Very impressive documents prepared, as usual, shows that you take your job very seriously and you take us very seriously. We'll continue to congratulate and commend you for the work that you're doing. Thank you so much. Colleagues, allow me then to hand over to the chair of the board of IDC to commence with the work that they are here for. Mme Mabuza, may I give hand over to you?
Chair and honourable members, especially the birthday girl. It's always an honour, Chair, to be here. I'll be very honest with you. When we receive invitations from yourself, we do get nervous, Chair, because we realise that we must come and account for what we've done. But at the same time, we also get excited because, without fail, we leave these meetings with new insights and new guidance on how we can even do better in discharging our duties. So we are honored, Chair, to have this opportunity to be with you this morning. Before, Chair, I make a few opening remarks, I'll allow the team members to introduce themselves. I did anticipate, Chair, that there would be some difficult questions around KPMG and all those things. So I hope you'll be proud of me that in anticipation I rallied the chair of our Risk and Sustainability Committee to come and assist the only male in our delegation with the difficult questions. And the rest of us, Chair, will cover everything else. We'll just leave the difficult questions for them. But I'll start to my right, Chair, asking each member of the delegation to introduce themselves, with the CEO doing so last.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, committee members. My name is Nonkululeko Dlamini. I am the CFO at the IDC.
Good morning, Chair, and the members of the committee. It's Nondokozo Hadebe, Head of Corporate Strategy.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Yolanda Hlongwane. I'm a Regional Business Analyst at the IDC.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lael Bethlehem. I'm a non-executive director of the IDC. I chair the Risk Committee, and in the past I've also chaired the Investment Committee.
Good morning, Chair, and morning, members. My name is Lize Gamatsega. I'm the Divisional Executive responsible for Industrial Infrastructure, Agro-Processing and Agriculture, and lastly, New Industries.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. My name is Piwe Marumo, and I'm the Manager in the CEO's Office. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeffrey Kriner. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Industrial Development Corporation. And once more, thank you for inviting us. The chair of the IDC says today I'm a backbencher, so I'll want to see how it feels to be one. Thanks.
Chair, thank you so much. We meet, Chair, to discuss our results for the year ended 31st of March. But, Chair, we meet a few days after the World Economic Forum released their Global Competitiveness Report, which shows that in their assessment, South Africa has dropped. We remain, Chair, on the positive side, in the top half of the countries that they assess. However, we have dropped 14 places in terms of our competitiveness in their assessment. And some of the areas, Chair, some of the pillars where the trend is downwards includes the area of financial services availability and affordability, which is core to our mandate, Chair, in economy such as ours. Chair, I'm pleased to say that we do have some good news. We will, however, as always, tell the truth here. I'm hoping, Chair, that in that truth, there's more good news than there is bad. We have faced headwinds, both in terms of how our local economy and the global economy continues to perform post the 2009 global financial crisis. Our mandate is, however, even more important, Chair, when the local economy is under the weather, as our economy is. Chair, we hope that we can demonstrate the effort that management has put into executing on our mandate through the numbers that are going to be presented to you today. You'll find, Chair, that our approval levels have gone up. It's a positive. Our disbursement levels have remained almost flat, marginally lower than last year. We, of course, wish they were much higher, and management continues, Chair, to put effort to ensure that those disbursement levels remain high. In terms of the jobs that we expect to create in the economy, Chair, we continue to try and refine the performance indicators that we measure. However, Chair, we're pleased to say that in the past financial year, we've seen some improvement in how we have performed compared to the past, to the previous financial year that we reported on. Chair, we take our mandate to advance transformative industrialization very seriously. And Chair, we realize that we must do that balancing our financial sustainability mandate together with our mandate to be promoting industrialization in the country. That means, therefore, Chair, that our systems and our controls must always be continually improved. Chair, we will touch on some of the areas that we believe we have worked on in a positive direction insofar as governance is concerned. We'll come to that later in the presentation. Ordinarily, Chair, the presentation would have been led by the CEO and David Jarvis, who's the executive in charge of strategy. We thought we should turn the tables a bit, Chair, to just demonstrate the depth that we have in the organization, which is the reason that we have the head of strategy today, Nontokozo Hadebe, who will take over from me, and ably supported by Nonkululeko, Chair, who you are all familiar with. I won't, therefore, Chair, steal their thunder. I think management is the one, are the people that have worked on achieving these results. They know that in this current year, we expect more. So I'd like them to commit themselves, Chair, in front of you, both in reporting on how we've done and also committing to us doing better going forward. I'll therefore hand over, Chair, to Nontokozo.
Thank you, Chair, for that introduction. Thank you, Chair, again, and the members of the committee for the opportunity to present to you today. And I would like to thank the Chair and the CEO for the opportunity. The Chair has covered most of the slides. I will just skip to the relevant ones. She's covered all of these slides. So we will start on slide, so that you can follow the presentation, on slide 11, really, of which she's also touched on our level of funding approvals in the year that we are reporting on, as well as the disbursements. I will try and be quick, but just to say that we usually get this opportunity at least twice a year to come in and present to yourself. So we've packed the presentation with a whole lot of detail, but we are going to skip the details. We can engage on it after the presentation so that we save time. On this slide, I think the Chair has really said that we are quite excited about the level of approvals, which is the highest as well in the last 4 or 5 years for the IDC at 15.3 billion. As you can see, we've tried as usual just to provide the five-year trend so that you can see how I'm doing compared to the previous years. So we are at 15.3, it's the highest in the last 5 years, as you can see. And with this 15.3, we've excluded at least a billion additional funding of the other funds that we manage on behalf of third parties. So it's just from our books what we've included here. The level of disbursements is definitely an area that we are really focusing on. Some of the reasons why it is not at the level that we would have liked it to be is we had quite a big program, a big chunk of renewable programs as part of our previous funding, but obviously with the delays from the national perspective in the announcement of the program, we have not been able to disperse any funds that are related to that program, and we are reviewing some of those projects in line with the recent announcement on the tariff. But also the economic conditions are one of the reasons why our disbursements are remaining flat, with people just avoiding debt in this current economic condition. The next slide is the committee. You will have seen it several times, but we do want to emphasize it, considering that Evolve is only 3 years, our proactive strategy is only 3 years. But it's just to emphasize that our funding characteristics are now in line with our priority value chains and sectors that we have prioritized with Project Evolve. We had selected at least 3 value chains, which are listed here. We've also prioritized new industries, which is a forward-looking sectors, looking at the sectors of the future or the industries of the future. We have also prioritized special high-impact sectors, which includes motion pictures, clothing, textile, footwear, and leather products. High-impact sectors, which were quick wins for us, where we can get jobs easily and other transformation objectives. And then industrial infrastructure, which is supporting all of these sectors. And our funding is in line with this. So most of the slides that I'm going to go through now demonstrate that we are really staying true to our strategy, Project Evolve strategy. Then the next slide is, if you look at our investments in the period that we are reporting. Oh, okay, sorry for that. I was trying to locate the pointer here. If you look at this slide here, the funding split, it's definitely in line with the sectors that we have prioritized, with at least 8 billion going to metals and mining, 2 billion to chemicals and pharmaceuticals, and those are all our value chains that we have prioritized. They are taking up probably over 60% of the funding that we have approved, and the rest go into the other sectors as well. Also on the same note is that it is encouraging for us that most of the funding went towards capacity expansion as well as projects and new startups, because if we really are working on transforming the economy or changing the economic landscape, we should be creating more productive capacity than which is driven from the capacity expansions and projects and new startups. But we are mindful that there is a need for distress funding, particularly in the current economy that we are in. So part of our funding as well went towards distressed businesses, which is at least 13% of our funding, but the bulk is expansion and project startups. The next slide is, again, it's taking the same format or structure of looking at what we've done since introduction of Project Evolve. So it's roughly 2 years, 2016 and 2017, breaking it down per each sectors that we have prioritized. How have we done in terms of value funding approved? How have we done in terms of the number of clients supported? Are we focusing on just one big client or few big clients, or we are really expanding our support as well as the utilization of funds within those specific sectors? I had made a point previously that the value chains are taking a big, we took a big chunk of our approvals. Metals and mining value chains remain the largest contributor of to the IDC's funding activity, with almost half of their funds approved going towards metals and mining. Similarly, number of clients supported are also taking the same trend. As you can see that for metals and mining, we've got about 72 clients that we have supported. And most of our funding is in line with the sectors that we supported, the focus areas that we have identified, the yellow bars here, I think it's yellow. And the ones that we say is outside of the value chains, it's the sectors that we've prioritized, but they are not the value chains that I've already alluded to: industrial infrastructure, new industries, special high impact and high impact. And you will see that, as I said, that special high impact and high impact, they give us an opportunity for quick wins. They've got quite a number of clients that we have supported, even though the value of funding that we've approved is not that much. So it's definitely what we were trying to achieve. The utilization of funds, exactly the same pattern as the previous slide, where we've got a bulk of funding towards expansion projects and the new startups. I have to highlight a high portion of distress funding under agro-processing and agriculture, which we have discussed with the community previously, the work that we were doing with LandBank on drought management in the previous years, in the previous year or so. So that will be the 50% here that went towards distress funding. And there was also one big client that we have supported under especially high impact in the construction sector that just contributed then to the distress funding portion. And the next slide, similarly, the resultant development outcomes are also aligned with our Evolve expectations. The presentation does highlight that most of our jobs were, again, aligned with the funding activities from the previous slide, with most of the jobs created from the metals mining and mining, industrial infrastructure, as well as high impact. Obviously, we would have wanted to see more from the agro-processing and agriculture, but it's not at the level that we had hoped in terms of the approvals and the jobs from that sector that will be the level that we had expected. But it's a work in progress. We will get to the details of what we're trying to do with agro-processing and agriculture going forward so that we can really optimize our outcomes from this particular value chain. But also
looking at jobs, the cost of our jobs, it's in line with what is expected in terms of the economy, and we usually report on direct jobs. We have included here cost also in direct jobs so that the committee can also see beyond the direct jobs that we are reporting other benefits in terms of jobs. Similarly, metals and mining, if you include indirect jobs, you see that at least 4 million will create about 5 jobs. Agriculture is it's one sector that we know that if we want to have as many jobs created as we, it's a sector that we have to focus on, because we can even get up to 10 jobs per million, which is why it's a critical sector for us that we have to focus on. Here, this other graph, it's just also per sector focusing on the transformation outcomes, which we've done quite well with all the sectors. Obviously, they follow the trend of the funding, with the bulk of transformation in metals and mining. Youth empowerment, it's got a big portion that is linked to the industrial infrastructure. We are still going to go further down the presentation, go through details on each transformation area, black industrialists, women and youth empowerment, supplementing it with the case studies as well. So I will not want to spend much time on this at this point in time. Then these are the slides that I just wanted, I alluded to that we've got quite a lot of details, but we're not going to go through the details, but we're trying to here to showcase our strategies, the projects that we are currently doing. Some of the work that we are presenting here is not, it's forward-looking, so it does not necessarily link back to the previous financial year that we are reporting on, but it's the best way of trying to integrate what exactly our value chains are trying to achieve, what are the strategies that we are driving, what are the development outcomes that we want to achieve per each value chain or sectors that we have prioritized, and supplementing it with the number of case studies. Starting with machinery and equipment, it's this is an interesting value chain in a sense that it's got a lot of, it's got an opportunity for skills development, particularly around things like welding, which are critical for the country, but it also critical to support other manufacturing sectors in terms of manufacturing of equipment for oil and gas, water handling, storage and power distribution, bulk handling, and construction. So it links to all other value chains that we have prioritized. I can even make an example with this project here, MM Engineering. I think we had discussed it with the committee previously, which where they are manufacturing gas cylinders, and one of the projects, Sunrise Energy, which I'm going to talk to later on, will be working with this particular company. So this particular company will benefit from the Sunrise Energy, which is dealing with a gas supply as a service provider for the gas cylinders. And in terms of the development impact, where we can, we really want to make sure that we support transformation objectives. So this particular project is one of the black industrialist projects that we have implemented. And it's also important for import replacement. The next one is the bike automobile. We have discussed it again several times, and we have taken a decision that every time we come to the committee, we'll try and provide the status update on the bike project. We are aware of the attention, of the media attention that the project is receiving. However, we are quite happy with the progress at this point in time. There's a lot of preparatory work on the ground that is happening in anticipation for the construction. We're working well with the partners just to make sure that we still in line with the objectives of the targets and our partners are meeting the regulatory requirements that we had contracted to, that the parties had contracted to. But the details of the progress is included here. There are some delays in terms of starting the production, which was going to be September, second quarter of 2018, but we are still hoping that by 2018 we'll have started the production. It might not be second quarter per se, but we're working around the clock to make sure that we start with the production. But the details of the work that is being done is included here, which is more preparatory work than anything. And then on the next slide is agro-processing. I did indicate that we were not happy with the performance at this point in time in terms of the approvals and the jobs that we have received. Obviously, there are a number of issues, internal and external to the IDC. Internally, we sorted our capacity to be able to respond to what is required here. There's a greater focus on backward integration because we've seen that most of the challenges is that when we focus on processing, we don't have raw material for processing. So we're trying to make sure that we backward integrate so that we do have raw material that we can process. And we are working closely with Land Bank from the primary side of things because they are responsible for the primary agriculture, and we know that if we work together, then we will not have problems from the processing side. So they provide raw material from the primary side, and then we focus on the agro-processing. But where they are not capable, as IDC, we have taken a decision that we'll even go as far as investing in the primary agriculture. So in the next 3 years or so, we want to see the turnaround in the agro space. It's receiving much attention. The examples that is included here, the case studies, it links to the issue of ocean economy, PAKISA, that was recently launched, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. We picked the Doreen by Abalone, which is here in the Western Cape. We started small with this project, but now we are upscaling for commercial scale, and it's a community-owned project. And we're also doing something from the Karoo Catch, which is also in the aquaculture space, catfish farming and processing. So, but there are other sectors that we have not highlighted here. Just here we are focusing on the aquaculture and seafood product production strategy. Then moving on, looking at the chemicals and pharmaceutical value chain, really the focus here is on energy mix and security of supply. There are other objectives of the chemicals and pharmaceutical, but we've just picked these ones just to showcase to the committee today. And there are a number of projects that we're working on. There's a number of, just to highlight that it's not just about funding, skills development, it's on top of our minds, the government objectives are on top of our minds, which is why I'm stressing that we are focusing on energy mix and security of supply, but the interests of the clients are also on top of mind, and the community benefits also on top of mind. So the projects that we've highlighted is Sunrise Energy. I know that we're saying that we initiated it in 2007, but it's still very much in line with our strategy for energy mix because it's liquid fuels, gas being part of one of the key objectives that we want to grow in terms of meeting the objectives of energy mix. It's going well. We've come up with a new approach from what we had thought it would be in 2007. We're starting small. Currently we said maybe let's try and focus on the community end, which is quite, it's a cheaper alternative for cooking and heating compared to electricity, safer and safer than paraffin. So we started from the community angle and then hoping that we'll also ramp up to other industries that then they can convert to using LPG now that a secure supply is available. So what which we've highlighted in the presentation is that we are participating in a project with a company to roll out at least 1,500 gas cylinders to the local community, hoping that then we'll have appetite of other industries around this community to benefit from the project. And this is more from the oil storage, oil tanking NOx, but what I want to highlight between these two projects is the cross-pollination on skills development, because the people that we are using here, especially for the welders, will also be working on the same project, the oil tanking NOx, because they are around the same place, which is why I was saying that we do have the interest of the clients and the community at hand. So we have to look for those opportunities, because the clients, it's not something that they will ordinarily look at on how they collaborate at a project level. These are just some of the examples of the work that is on site. The what do we call this? It's a bullet with a, what's the name? Yeah, it's the bullets that we are constructing for the gas storage in this front. And all tanking mugs, it's still under construction, as the committee will see in the presentation. On the industrial infrastructure, other key strategies which we have demonstrated before through case studies, it's water and energy. We came here with a number of case studies, but this time around we've picked logistics and telecom strategy, just to demonstrate the work that we are doing in this front. And the projects that we've picked up here is Kuka Aerial Ropeway, where we are really, it's around the logistics, but we are mindful on the traffic and heavy reliance on roads transportation for some of the material from one mine to the other mine for beneficiation or processing. But in this instance, this project will instead use a different, more costly, effective and innovative way of transporting material from one mine to the other for processing. So it's using an aerial ropeway. This is the example of what we are talking about here. It's a black owned company, 70% local content. You will also see that it's these are other projects that we are working on. Bike is just the reason why we have bike here is because, as I said, that industrial infrastructure is critical to support other sectors. In this instance, they are working on a supplier park, which is linked to the bigger bike project. So it's not the manufacturing plant, it's the one that I spoke about earlier on. But this one here particularly, it's a support through the supplier park. The next one is clothing and textile, which is a tricky sector in a sense that we know that it's in terms of labor, it's quite important, but it's been struggling because of imports. And as the IDC and the DTI and other sectors, we've really focused on turning this sector around. And we've seen that what we need is more closer management. So we don't just provide funding, but we go to the level of working with the exco's and the boards of these companies that we are in this sector, so that we can really recognize opportunities for growth and sustainability. So it's not just to sustain
the level of activity, but the way to turn around the sector is to focus on growth, competitiveness, so that they are sustainable. So the examples that we've picked here in this particular slide is where we've worked with these companies to focus more on new markets. The milk blankets, which are quite appealing in the country, but also we've got appetite in other neighboring countries. So these two examples are surplus textiles as well as Yili Desan are focusing on those milk blankets. We understand that we have created opportunities for both of them, but we've made sure that they are complementary, so they are not competing with each other, understanding that the stresses that this sector has. But we're working well, and I think the grants or the work that we're doing with the grant programs that we have are really yielding results. As you can see that one of the companies, we've even managed to increase the turnover in the last financial year, which has doubled now to 250 million. And it has posted profits for the first time in the 2017 financial year. Okay, these are the examples of the factories for these companies that I've spoken to. Okay, on media motion. Okay, on media and motion picture. I think probably what I want to highlight here is the collaboration, really, with all. This is just one sector that has got a number of role players, but fragmented. And our approach really was just to say that let's provide infrastructure, which will ensure that all these other stakeholders can collaborate. Let's pull all stakeholders together. And most of our projects really is mainly on the production and capacity that we are creating, Skyring being one of the projects that we've highlighted. This is one sector that is very ripe for transformation in terms of youth, in terms of black filmmakers, and we are making sure that we are focusing on those particular areas. And it's interesting because we know that there's this demand for local content. So we are using that to bring in black filmmakers and using that opportunity of growing local content. These are some of the examples in pictures. And then on new industries, as I indicated, it's a forward-looking sector. Okay, sorry, let me just make sure that my notes here are in line with the presentation. Previously, we've shown you a number of projects that we are working on, the lasers, the molecules, which are around energy storage, fuel cells, but we thought that this time around, let's just demonstrate the work that we are doing around changing manufacturing, the additive manufacturing. Metal Hubs, it's one of the projects, which can be used for across the sectors. It can be for mining, as indicated. We can use it for stainless steel, tool steel, aluminium, titanium, 3D print. As I indicate, it goes across. So we're working with CSIR currently. It's a semi-commercial scale plant, but we're hoping that once we see the extent of what we can do with this project, then we will focus on commercial scale plant, but for now it's semi-commercial. I note, Chair, that every time I run the pointer, let me not use it now, because I point directly at you. On the manufacturing, light manufacturing and tourism, again, it's interesting work that we have been doing. We brought back ICT as indicated, and we've seen that it's one sector that also that attracts youth, like the project that we've demonstrated, which I just call it Uber for domestic workers, where we connect people that require domestic workers via an app. So that's why I'm saying just it's an Uber for, I don't know how best to explain it, but it's a youth controlled and managed with a funding of about 7 million or so. And then in heavy manufacturing, again, we've highlighted a couple of projects from the tissue products and Nobomate. Even though we said that these are the sectors that we are reactive in, we've realized that we also have to pick some of the sectors and focus on those, like wood products, pulp and paper, recycling and waste treatment. I'm told that I'm even though I said that detail, I'm focusing on that detail. Let me try and ramp up. And then the other, this slide now is the composite of the work that we've done. It's the aggregate. They are not broken down into sectors. We are happy that we're really turning the tide on jobs expected to be created and saved. We increased at least by 37% from the previous financial year. It's quite exciting considering the current economic environment. We've just had the results not so long ago that we've even lost more jobs. So for us to create more jobs, it's really what we really want to see. So we've turned the tide, and as you can see, that bulk of the work that we've created, it's in the manufacturing space. Apologies for this. I think here it's construction, so it didn't come through in terms of the legend, but the red is construction. But bulk of the work that we, bulk of the jobs are coming from the manufacturing, which is in line with our strategy. This is an example where we've created, just demonstrating the jobs that we've created in Mpumalanga province, one of the mining companies that we have supported. This is another case study, which is quite critical in terms of water conservation strategy of the country, and it's a water saving device which is being piloted in a number of municipalities. I think it includes Tswane, Kangala, amongst the municipalities that this client is working with to pilot this device. If it works, then it will be upscaled to other country, to other sectors or other municipalities as well. But it is receiving a lot of attention from government, from the government space. I've spoken about the transformation in the previous slides, but here it's just a bigger picture, also looking at our 5-year trends of how we've performed. We've significantly increased in 2017. We understand that we do have few large transactions that are behind the increase, but if we also look at the number of clients we have supported, they are also increasing. So it's not just increasing the value, but it's also increasing the number of people that are receiving support for transformation. This is the Women Empowered Businesses, which, as you can see, where we've tripled from 1.1 in the previous financial year to about 3.2. And then the next slide is a case study of the Black Ownership Women from Limpopo that we are supporting, providing laboratory services to one of the mines. Youth support, we also quite excited with the increase from 1 billion to about 2.3 billion. Internally as well, we've done quite a lot of work in supporting youth, pre-investment as well as post-investment. Pre-investment including market analysis, and with that type of support that we've provided, we've seen a lot of appetite from the youth in terms of their businesses. This is a case study for the youth to enter a niche market with links to the media and motion picture sector that I spoke about, that it's quite ripe for transformation be it youth or black filmmakers. So this is the case study that we had already shown previously. Another one, which is youth, but it also has quite benefits for job creation in the tourism sector. It's quite comforting that it's youth is not just limited to ICT, but it's across the manufacturing sectors that we are also focusing on as the ITC. The black-empowered and black-owned businesses, I showed you the slides again previously, but it's in line with the overall jump from 4.9 to 10 billion, almost double than what we had done before. The black industrialist, the chair indicated that you've seen some good work on the ground around the work in supporting black industrialists, but again, it's also on the increase. I think it helped as the ITC to just make a deliberate decision to focus on the transformation element of our work. That's why we're seeing these increases, because we're really paying attention and finding the opportunities where we can, and also working with government, particularly on the Black Industrialist program that DTI is running with. These are some of the examples in the furniture space, which is also has challenges with imports, and it's a good case study in terms of import replacement and also focusing on the lower end of the market segment. Another black industrialist example, tissue converting, which we are supporting to improve competitiveness, also allowing them to provide their own, to manufacture their own raw material as part of the cost improvement strategy of the firm. Localization, it's quite critical, almost 5 billion approved for localization in line with the government program. This particular one, they provide special valves which supports water, mining, a number of sectors. Really, it's in line with the government infrastructure program on replacement of imported machinery and equipment. While we have given you the global picture, but we also just want to emphasize that our funding continues to promote regional growth. This is the 5-year funding from 2013 to 2017, really per province. Northern Cape and all the 9 provinces. Northern Cape remain amongst the highest with at least 15 billion and Gauteng 18 billion. This one, we've said it before, it links to the renewable energies that have been done in that province not so long ago. And then on this one, these are some of the examples of projects that we have funded by province. Some of them we've already covered in the previous slides, like furniture manufacturing that we have just referred to recently, and the packaging. In the KZN, we've spoken about some of these examples. But here we are also highlighting the funding to rural-based enterprises. Rural-based, meaning it's mainly the farmlands and traditional areas. About 5 billion went to rural areas, and with that, we saw about 6,400 jobs or so. This is quite an example of township supporting township enterprises through industrialization, which is really the means that are quite common in the township. We know that access to steel is a bit of a challenge for small suppliers, so now they are working from the scraps to create some of the products that are required in the construction industry, amongst other areas. while they are at the bottom of the value chain, we are also trying to just close that gap and link them with the primary, so that they are complementary to the primary steel makers. And then funding into the rest of Africa, the chair said that, our chair said that we must be honest about what has worked and what has not worked. This is one of the examples that has not really worked for us. As you can see that the level of funding has been declining in 20s for the last 2 years or so. It's really, we have changed our strategy to say that in our investments in the rest of Africa must link to our value chains, but we have not really gone to the level of linking our value chains, creating regional value chains. But it's an area that we are focusing on. We are hoping that the picture will improve. Just to highlight here, 2013, the drop, it was really around cancellation of some of our projects in the mining and industrial infrastructure space that resulted in the negative with the 1.5 billion really a drop in our funding. But as I indicated, that it's one area even the board and the shareholder have requested that we focus on. If we are to make any inroads with our value chain, we must really work across the continent. Okay. The subsidiaries, it's an area that has attracted quite a discussion in the committee. We came here, I think, earlier this year with a bit of detail of what are we going to do to turn around most of our subsidiaries that are not performing. The work is still in progress. I'm not going to delve into the detail because we had indicated what are we trying to do, especially for the three subsidiaries. Other than to highlight that work is underway. FOSCO in particular, we've made some progress. We've already concluded on two of the four strategic investment partners, equity partners, that we are introducing into the company so that it can be competitive. The other two, it's work on progress. And CIFA, we're working with the board to turn around the financial sustainability, focusing on optimization of our revenue collection, reduction of operating costs, and so forth. And then we always leave it for the last slide, but it is as important as all the other work that we are doing because it's the work that we do that touches the communities directly. Through our corporate social investments and social enterprise. We've invested around probably 80 million overall on social enterprises, education and skills development, and entrepreneurship to transform the economies, the communities, with the hope that these communities that we are working with, at some point they will also migrate to the bigger economy. So the work, as you can see, that the work that we are doing is in line with our value chains. So the priority sectors around ICT programs, skills development in the manufacturing space. Allow me not to go through each project because of time. The support for the colleges aims to upskill youth. We've spoken about this previously. The Skills Development Center, the SINACO Skills Development Sector, also in line with our transformation objectives, focusing on youth and women in the manufacturing sector. The non-profit organization that trains and mentors aspiring farmers, which is critical for the raw material. The work, the community project, Eshowe in KwaZulu-Natal, around use of indigenous plant species,
which also has opportunities for even exports, the product for export purposes. And then the last slide really deals with governance and operational efficiencies. We've done quite a lot. Other than the work that we usually communicate, we've done quite a lot in the back office, which is what we call the back office, to improve our efficiencies. We've reduced the information that is required from clients when applying for funds so that it is easier. We've introduced online application process. By doing online application process, you already know what is required, what sort of documents you need to submit, and it's reducing our turnaround times. There's the work that is being done on post-investment management. And also, obviously, working on the culture and the leadership capability of the organization. And then the governance initiatives, it's quite a busy slide, but just to pick up at least the last part, which we had committed through our shareholder that we'll be disclosing information on all companies where we are funding politically exposed people. That information is already available in our website. To date, all the approvals from 1st of April 2017 until 31st August are in our website. I think that is the last slide from my side, and thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you, Nontokozo, and committee members, good morning again. Chair, I will be just talking through the financial numbers that support the operational performance that Nontokozo has shared with the committee in quite a good detail. And maybe just to say that as per one of the initial slides in the presentation, we do indicate that our primary objective is to drive this industrial development, which goes with our mandate. But we want to try and do that in a financially sustainable way, such that the IDC itself can carry its own activities with the funds that it is generating itself or gets from the markets. I will start from slide number 59, and the picture that we show there is just to give you an indication of which are these entities we are supporting, which we support through the IDC. We call it mini group, and this is where all this activity is happening. But through the work we do, we end up acquiring entities that become our subsidiaries and others become associates. If I can give you a sense of numbers, we probably have over 40 companies that we have to put into our books as subsidiaries, and over 100 that are associates and joint ventures through all these investments that we talk about. And if I go then to the next slide, this is just to talk about our financial sustainability, which is basically saying the work we do, the investments that we put through into the economy, are coming either from the profits that we generate, and we will share a little bit with you the profits for this financial year. The entities that we would have invested in the past, and we feel that they are mature enough, and they no longer need the IDC support, and we can then let them go and recycle that money to new entities, and that's where we divest and use that money for new requirements. We also then go to the open market, or rather the market financial markets, and raise money. Which then also supports in where we've got gaps, and we have to strike that balance in terms of making sure that we are financially sustainable in driving then the loan funding or the equity funding. Then on slide 61, just to give you some highlights, and we have split it into what the IDC group, which would have taken into account all the subsidiaries and associates that we have, as well as the operations of the mini group. And Chair, you will see that the arrows are green. Even the red one, when I explain, you will basically conclude that it is also green. Because, Chair, what happened in this past financial year is that Nontokozo has mentioned that we've got some subsidiaries like Fosco, SCORE, and SIFA, which are our main subsidiaries, which we have said they are struggling and we are getting support for them. And in the revenue line that we show at the IDC group level, it includes the Fosco, SCORE, and SIFA and other entities' performance. But in the accounting terms, then what we needed to do, because the process that we are going through in supporting SCORE to return to better performance is quite advanced. So we I think when we came here the last time, we did say that we are trying to get a strategic equity partner that will support us with operations but also inject capital that can assist SCORE to turn around, even though we know that it is struggling because the steel industry is challenged. But now what accounting requires is that as you get closer to this process and you've identified the elements of the business that you are going to carve out and get into that strategic equity partner, you need to disclose them in a particular way, in that we had to take out the revenue that relates to these elements, and therefore the 17.4 billion that we show as revenue for the group has taken out about 2.4 billion. And it is shown as a separate line in the financial statements, and I will show you a bit of a detail later. So if you add that back, the revenue total is fairly flat, if not almost green, because the revenue is there, but it is just disclosed in a separate line. But because we didn't show the comparatives in the financials, it almost looks like it's red. So it is a disclosure issue rather than that it actually dropped. And therefore, we move from that 19.4 to 17.4 in terms of revenue. And in the net profit for the year, we have 2.2 billion performance, and last year we had 223 million rand, which is a significant improvement, and I will give you a bit of a detail of what are the elements that actually contributed to this positive performance. Another element that we wanted to highlight, Chair, to the committee is the fact that I indicated in an earlier slide that we've got entities that we equity account for. That means we've got a share significant enough for us to disclose them in that particular way. We saw very good performance from them if you compare to the previous year, where we are reporting close to a billion rands. And, Chair, our asset base also grew from 121 billion to 130. And this is very important for us because it assists us in making sure that we can further stretch this balance sheet to further try and assist the economy as we continue to disburse. The numbers just below is also the same set of numbers, but we show them just at the investment level, which is the IDC. But maybe just to highlight that one of the numbers that we watch very closely is the impairment, which talks to how these entities are performing and how we need to focus and support them. And I think we've got the chair of our board risk committee. It is one of the areas that she really spends time on to just understand how are these entities performing. Is there risks that we need to focus on to ensure we support them, but when necessary make these provisions to indicate that some of these entities are struggling, and in the future with the support we give, sometimes they do turn around. Chair, if I then can quickly go, it's a lot of numbers, but I will just highlight just a few. I've already highlighted the revenue line on slide 62, where we move from 19 billion to 17. But maybe I can just highlight another number, which is called capital gains. And this is an indication of where we enter into investments at a point in time, and later they either mature and we exit. And in this particular case, we entered into a structure about 10 years ago, which was Exxaro related, where there was black economic empowerment and so on. And in November last year, that structure matured, and we were able to then to recognize a very positive positive performance in the form of capital gains, which have actually assisted us. We will get cash in to that effect as well to assist us to invest in the new structure going forward, but also the difference can go to assist in other investments. The other element is where we are managing our operating expenses very closely. Chair, in that number, which in the new year is 6.4 billion and was 7.7 billion, there are two elements. We've got the operating expenses that we use to run the business, and that is totally within our control, and we monitor that number very closely. At best, it grows by inflation, and in the past years, we've actually challenged the business to live at zero inflational growth, and they've risen up to that challenge, and we continue to monitor it. So this is where our people that are driving these investments are being paid. But on the other hand, the impairment of our investments is a number that is also added there, and I will show you in the few next slides that with the effort that we have put in the business, we have seen a lot of these impairments, which is where the investments are not performing, getting reversed because of the effort in trying to assist them, or those that actually have been nursed to recovery. The last number probably that I would like to highlight there, I think we've already spoken, is the profit line, which we've spoken about. If I quickly go past, this slide is very busy, Chair, so I will not talk through each of the numbers, but maybe just to highlight the three subsidiaries that Nontokozo has spoken about, because the mini group numbers, if we look at the profit line, we did indicate that we did perform very much better than what we had reported in the previous year. But if you look at the three subsidiaries, which is Fosco, Score, and CIFA, and maybe cast your eyes to the third line from the bottom, which is called profits and loss for the year, you will see that Fosco on its own contributed quite a significant loss to the IDC total group picture. And it's an environment, as Nontokozo indicated, we have been monitoring. And when we compare the performance of Fosco in the last year to this year, we do see improvements because there has been a lot of focus in turning around the operations. I think we did mention previously that there was already a change in management and leadership to help drive the performance that we require of this entity. So we have seen improvement in performance and operations. So as much as these numbers look high, we've seen improvement in operations. The only thing that happened is that because when our auditors looked at the numbers into the future, much as we were quite confident that we are implementing projects to turn it around, they took a judgment that says maybe these things will take a bit longer, and they took a view to put in some impairment of about 520 million. So if you were to separate that impairment impact, you will note that the loss from the operations only of Fosco is only about 360 million rand. And it's a situation we're monitoring, and in the corporate plan that we've shared with the committee, we are anticipating a turnaround to profitability in future years. Same with Score, where we are reporting 787 million rand. And Chair, if I can highlight that number in the numbers we reported in the previous financial year was over 8 billion rand in a loss. So as they wait to, or rather as they work towards getting the strategic equity partner, there's been a lot of work happening to try and drive efficiencies, and they've looked at non-core assets and tried to release them, which has assisted in that performance. But in the longer term, we anticipate that with the introduction of this strategic equity partner, which will bring in some operational expertise and bring in equity, the Score performance would also improve. And lastly, on CIFA, Chair, we report a loss of 220 million, but I do need to highlight that CIFA as an entity gets a grant from the shareholder or from government, which comes through the shareholder, but we report their performance excluding that grant, which then means if you were to take that into account, it's also over 200 million, it's about 207 million. In essence, they are break even because that is not the money they would have to pay back. So they're at break-even, but we are wanting to get CIFA to be at better performance on its own even before you take the grant into account, because that is meant to also assist the kind of market that they are trying to get through with better concessionary funding. And as I indicated, from other subsidiaries and joint ventures that we have, we saw much better performance that contributed close to a billion or just above a billion rands into our performance, which gives you a sense of our group. The rest of the slides, Chair, which I'll go through very quickly then, is just to give you a sense of the history as well as where our sources of funding are coming from. And, Chair, the storyline there is the fact that we have listed and unlisted entities that are assisting us to continue investing through giving us dividends to continue using for investments moving forward. But also on the interest as well, we do see a lot of these entities actually do pay back the money and actually give us interest as well. And just to give an example, when we see the comparison of the interest we recorded in the previous year to what we have in the financial year past, Chair, it is a case where we've had investments that while we were nursing to life, we've had to put through some impairments. But when they recover and they are de-risk and they do better, we are able to recognize that money back, which assists in performance. So over the years, and that's why we always take a long-term view when we look at these investments. And Chair, the impairment, which I highlighted earlier, is a number that we monitor very closely because it has an impact in how even our funders look at us to say what are you investing in and is it likely to actually grow and result in benefits. And therefore we monitor the number, and the board in fact on impairment has said we should never exceed the levels of 20%. As you can see, we have trending well below that 20%, and in fact in the past 3 years we've seen some further improvements to the levels of the 16.7, and we have an aspiration to possibly get to the levels of 15%, but we are also mindful of where the economy is right now because we will have to take account of some of the entities that may be distressed and we may have to impair with the expectation that in the long term they would have to recover. But you can see that in the last year we reported much better numbers than we did in the previous year in that the total impairment number was 2 billion as compared to the 3.6 billion that we reported in the previous year. And you can see that in other sectors we even had a recovery than actually making an impairment where you see a positive. However, if you look at chemicals and textiles, we have quite significant impairments that we had to put through, and Fosco is one of the contributors to that additional impairment impact. Chair, very briefly then, just to share with you our financial position at the end of the last financial year, we have policies that require that at any point in time, we need to be comfortable that we've got enough cash should be there be any event to be able to carry on with the business for at least 3 months. So our cash balances would normally be around the levels of above 6.5 billion to 7 billion, and we are still very comfortable that we are keeping to that policy of cash. Our loans and investments have also grown if you look at just the 2 years, which basically indicates that even though there were those that we would have given loans in the past and they repaid, but we also invested a lot in loans, which results in that growth, as well as other investments, which is equity investments. We bring in there the property, plant, and equipment, which is the assets of our main subsidiaries, your Fosco and Score, and other assets. But significantly, Chair, maybe on capital and reserves, we did see a bit of a recovery from the commodities space, which assisted to boost our reserves. I think when we reported in the past year, it was actually a drop. And again, that is significant to us because in the context of us having to go to capital markets and raise money, that determines the strength of our balance sheet in looking at the debt-equity ratio and how much we can be able to raise from the market. And as you can see, we've continued to raise debt where it grew from 27 billion to about 30 billion. And it was basically to supplement the funding of our projects with our own funds. And just one or two slides last, Chair, is just to say then, if you just look at our financial base, we've spoken about the 130 billion. Our debt equity ratio is at about 34%, and over the years it has been growing as we have been looking at the combination of our own money and debt. We are monitoring that number because the board has said it prudently it must not exceed 60%. We're comfortable that we still have some room to continue using a mix of our own money and debt. And I think we have a very close interaction quite frequently with our lenders to just maybe keep them close so that as we continue to talk to them, we ensure that there's comfort in their performance, and they've been showing a sense of comfort to continue working with the IDC. Chair, lastly, the slide that talks to the commitments is about, Nontokozo spoke about approvals of 15 billion in this financial year, and these approvals do happen in a year, but we disperse them to the economy over a period of time. So the 15 billion that we spoke about is a commitment that the IDC has made to disperse this money as specific events are met by in specific times so that we can then release the money from the IDC. And as we ended the year financially from the past approvals, we had about 30 billion that is waiting to be disbursed, which will contribute to improving that 11 billion that we spoke about earlier of disbursements. And we just highlight the various sectors and industries that this money would be disbursed to. And Chair, that is really the high-level view of the financial performance. And maybe just in conclusion, the Chair, the CEO will take this one.
Thanks, Chair, CFO, and the Head of Strategy. Chair, I think the presentation does indeed show that in spite of the environment, which has been really challenging, we have managed to perform as IDC. We're the first ones to say there are areas which we can do better and more. I think the two being on the rest of the African continent and also on the agricultural space. But we've they are right in our radar screen, and we are indeed making an effort. We do anticipate, Chair, that as we will be called upon to continue to play our counter-cyclical role. In fact, it's when times are like these that we have to step up. But we are very well aware that the environment has not improved to the at the speed that we would have hoped. And we're starting to see also a number of companies that are in distress that have been approaching us. So it's going to indeed impact on our performance. We did indicate that when we came early in the year, when we presented our plans, Chair, that the environment is still difficult. But we have set ourselves ambitious and bold goals because we do realize and recognize that IDC as a development finance institution needs to continue to play that role of stimulating this economy. So with those few words, Chair, we say thank you for the opportunity to present, as always, and we would, with your permission, then, Chair, engage with the committee members. Thank you. And the Chair has just reminded me that we need to anticipate the questions by the committee and refer to the KPMG. I'm sure the board members, our relationship with KPMG, in fact, I'm sure the committee members have seen in the annual report that they are both signed by SNG and KPMG. KPMG being the previous auditors of a number of Oak Bay Limited companies related, and SNG having just resigned. So that matter has been discussed at board level and together with the shareholder, and we are looking at how do we continue ensuring that we have auditors but also being alive to what is coming up. So the board has is seized with that opportunity, with that, so that we make that sober determination. So, and I think in the months to come, in fact, the board audit committee has been tasked with the, because that's where the approval of the auditors resides, has been tasked to look at that, to say what has happened in terms of the environment and what does it mean for us. Because also what has been clear, which is in any event has been a discussion the board has had, that some of these, in fact, these auditors have been with us for a while. So in the normal course of rotation, that's one of the things that we have to do as well in an event. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair. We look forward to the interaction.
Thank you very much. As usual, we have spent a lot of time getting the report, but very encouraging to listen to what you're presenting. Together with the I think when you try to motivate for the things that you are doing and the things that you couldn't do, it becomes quite interesting to listen because that's where you begin to understand the gist of issues. Thank you so much. I can see that you really have very active and very involved staff members. And being women also proves that they are quite hands-on. Thank you for exposing them to us. We can see that they know what they're talking about. Members, you've heard things have been demonstrated to you already in the form of a report. Can we interact with the report? Can I see your interest in by show of hand? Bab Beginini? Bab January. And then Mam Matsimbi, the Ted Kliani. In that order, please.
Thank you very much. First I wish to welcome the report. It's quite informative. You know, I wanted also to withdraw answering asking any questions on the basis of the whatever issue they're able to clarify it. So it was quite informative, Chair. But mine, very simple, Chair. You see there's a work done in all provinces. Don't worry about the margin of amount. But it seems, I think you're going to provinces, you're going to regions after that. That's where you're going. I think I'm quite impressed by that in going forward. The only my question is a simple one. I don't think even it's a question. I think it can be easily clarified. You see, the issue of the AIC, per se, we bail out lot of companies, automotive particular sector. One was GM. And then when they decide to go, they just go. Now, you know, ordinary people on the street, they saw that particular one. We invest here, but when they feel to leave, they just leave with our resources. It makes us worried about that particular one. So I think if we can get a clarity, what happened, how can we deal with that at the end of the day? And then there was a memorandum of understanding, if there was any, or in future we'll improve in doing that and make sure that that thing never happened again. There's that particular one. You see, the matter of CIFA, by the way that I was answered later on by the very same CIFA matter, I know that they operate under TTI now, or with small medium enterprise. But there was this loss of 223. That is a grant and can come back. You see, mine, there's an issue of capacity. Now, in your own area as ITC, you're able to go back and correct and intervene in whatever manner and change the strategy. I wonder how far they're in doing that themselves. I think that there's an issue of capacity constraints, that as ITC, we need to maybe to go closer there and close that gap. Because if they start doing that, automatically that train is going to follow you. They are going to go out with you. They are going to throw you up because they are going to assist them at all times. Now you end up being implicated one or another. I wanted to raise those particular issues. I don't want to be a long chair, but really I was clarified in most of the issues. Thank you very much.
And I'm very happy and pleased to receive such a birthday gift. I was earlier emotional, thinking of my mom, but this has removed all that thing. Let me appreciate and say to ITC, you aim to please. If you want to deal with me and my emotions, bring women forth. I'm so happy. Women are leading. If women are leading, I become so proud. Ntate Qhele is the king amongst the queens. Queena. Oh, I'm sorry. But I know I'll be forgiven because it's my birthday. Thank you very much, ITC. Thank you very much, Meche. I'm so happy with the representation that I'm seeing. The level of knowledge that they are displaying, it's very much encouraging. And my question, the profit loss on Fosco and SCOA, we have a risk manager here, or head of risk. How do we avoid, or how do we recover the loss, or how are we going to respond to the risk that we're facing? Because it is a loss. The loss is a risk, and we need to have an approach to respond. Are we going to avoid it? Are we going to transfer it? Are we going to retain it for future recovery? And that is my question. On many, many issues I've been clear. But one, it's the project that we visited. I don't know, was it in Jimiston? The cable one. Cable making. UIC. It is a very good project. It's scary and promising. They've already spent their 45 million. They're left with 5 million. Their rent is 200,000 per month. You cannot say they must move from their premises because they've invested a lot. The machines are built in. Now my worry is, are they going to survive? Because it's a new one. Are we having a plan in ensuring that that beautiful young company is going ahead, making it up there? Are we having any plan in ensuring that we are giving them something to say? Your loan, I think, is 1 million. So where I'm sitting, that Liani nearly cried looking at the work that they are doing, but the finances that they are having, the capacity that they are having, but they are only beginning. Are they having any special case? If not, now I'm requesting that you give them a special case, especially in them paying their loan the first year, to ensure that they grow, and you to ensure that they have agreements, contracts, maybe for 5 years, because they are producing cables, the mines are using, Eskom is using them, everybody is using the cables. Can we secure them the contract that will make the project grow? Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's also appreciate the presentation and the knowledge that we derive out of the presentation. Chair, we are always excited, of course, you know, to engage with our team from the ITC because of the beautiful work that they are doing. But we just want to ask a few questions. We are aware that the environment that they operate in now
is not as friendly as expected. Worldwide, there are issues with economies and so on. We appreciate that reality. But I would like to ask a question in this fashion. We are aware that there are profits there and everything. As far as figures are concerned, IDC is doing very well. But I want to suggest that we get an assessment, an off-the-cuff assessment away from the books and so on, which tells us how the leadership of the IDC feel the institution is doing as it relates to empowering black industrialists on the one hand, also on the other, supporting small business. In a nutshell, when you look at that, and when I say small business, I'm also referring to women and the youth, as gauged against the initial strategic expectation, whether we can say we are really doing well or we are complying, you know. If perhaps we could get an explanation on for that question. That is the first one, Chair. The second one is around what they are doing for clothing, textiles, and so on. The graphs show, the presentation show that for other industries, we are there in the billions and so on. And then for clothing and textile, it's 434 million. I'm not saying it's a small figure, but clothing and textiles for our people in South Africa, that is an area that they think they can quickly go in there. It does not need a lot of expertise and other things. But I see you are a little bit shy there. And also, this industry is facing a lot of competition from the Chinese and other people and so on. Isn't there another way of looking at this issue so that we can try and pull them out of the rut that they are in? And maybe a related question to what my colleague Matsimbe has asked around FOSCO and SCO, without, you know, belaboring the issue. I'm not necessarily looking at the losses, but I'm looking at the plan that you told us about previously, about finding a partner and so on and so on. It appears to me that it's a little bit hazy there. I don't see a clear plan about where you want to go with this matter. The CFO has tried to explain succinctly, you know, very professionally, in a smooth way and so on. But as you go into that smoothness, you don't really find something tangible to say, this is where we are and this is where we want to go. So we are not saying close shop. We are not saying that. We are worried about those jobs. They must be protected. But what is the real plan that is tangible in that regard? And let's also appreciate the investment that you have made in the BAKE arrangement. 35%, we are proud of that. As government, it gives us energy. If we are to visit that plant in future when it is complete and so on, we know that this is a government investment, this one. We own 35%. Share there. This is the direction that we think we should take in future. Of course, we need to continue supporting the small entrepreneur, but in the main, I think we should be targeting these big projects, which brings more jobs and prestige. We just want to commend you for that. The next question is on the two project that are mentioned in the presentation, Karukesh Enduring by Abalone. There aren't really figures there and so on. I want to talk about this because there's always been a problem, especially here in the Western Cape and so on, about the little fishermen and so on. They go on strike, they protest and so on because they believe that they don't get a share. You know, when they go into the sea, the law comes, they smash them down, and so on. If you could give a little bit more information around Karu Cash and during by Abalone. Who are the owners here? What's going on? How much are we supporting there? It's not very, very clear. It looks like it's just an afterthought. We need more because this industry has not been giving our people sufficient opportunities. It's only these big trailers and so on that come and take our fish away and so on. The local people don't seem to be benefiting. And we want to appreciate your honesty as far as your funding on the continent of Africa is concerned. We appreciate that honesty, that things are not so well there. What we think you should also tell us now, so if things are not so well, which has resulted in the funding having to drop and so on, what is the damage that has been caused? What are the losses there? Let us know, because the new plan that you are thinking about, which must be in line with your vision, must be able to know the damage that has been caused already, so that you are able to plan better. And lastly, I think the language in government these days about local content is there around 75%. Now, the presentation says that you expect that in about 5 years' time, you will be at 60. Can you explain to us what the dynamics are that are forcing you to anticipate to be at least at 60 in 5 years, and not in, you know, at 75%? But over and above, we appreciate the presentation, and we think that in due course, most of the problems shall be solved. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Ra leboga ntate Tleane ba bucela.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm going to take a cue from you, Chair, for appreciating our beautiful women, what they were presenting to us. And I think it is fitting for me to quote our President Oliver Reginald Tambo when we were celebrating the Year of the Women in 1986, where he said, "No longer should it be that a woman's place is in the kitchen in our beleaguered country. A woman's place is in the forefront of any struggle." That is what we are witnessing today. Our Tambo is correct. And we are very, very happy for what women are doing. From yesterday, we are seeing women taking the lead in doing presentation. Thanks for that. We appreciate it. Then secondly, Chair, in slide 18 and 19, I don't see what you are saying about the jobs that have been created in those two slides, particularly the one that Honorable Tiana has talked about, during by Abalone. We don't hear anything about jobs created there. If we could get some sense. Thanks.
Thank you. Uma ngithatha umfazi umama ngimbeka ngimnika iposition. Oh, uprefera ukuthatha umama amnike iposition. Uma amnike iposition, uma ngabe akaperform, uzayenza sure ukuthi uyamcapacitate, umnikeza the necessary support so that areache the capacity ayifunayo. Akagcina ngalapho. So it's always the case that you don't just put a woman there, you also make sure that she has necessary enablers to ensure that she's fully capacitated. That's what he said. Okay. Thank you so much for reminding us, Babcele. And Bab Mabika, auna lutho ba. Aside in the NFP, who's there? Noma ziyadida lezinto lezi manje usazama kuzi digester.
I went out, Chair, so I would be tempted to ask about something which maybe was clarified, but like I wanted to check if they did explain anything about the aircraft and some and things like those. Yeah, what is happening with regards to the craft? That is what I wanted to check, Chairperson. Yes. Yes, why was it so? Because was it because maybe it's a situation where it's not helping the country? I don't know, but that's what I wanted to mean, because I believe if there was a way, even SAA could be sold.
You want the order?
Honorable Mavika must just agree that he was not here. He did not hear anything.
Okay.
Please.
Okay. Yes, protect Agoto Mavika. Yeah, you're under my protection. Don't worry. Thank you so much for the question already asked. I'm going to just add on the questions asked. Can I continue? All right. Thanks, Chair. I just want to add on the jobs issue. I think the chair has indicated that we are not performing that well as a country, and as IDC, you have tried your best to save as much jobs as possible. Well, I agree that in terms, when I look at the medium term up to the year under review, it's quite clear that you've been managing, though not at a very large extent, but at least you've managed to save jobs through your distress fund. We've seen that even though where you've given up is because you've applied whatever measures that you wanted to help, but it could not. But you nevertheless managed to save jobs. And according to your targets, yes, we've exceeded the targets, marginally so. My own worry is that I'm not expecting you to be the only sole, saver of jobs or creator of jobs, but I'm expecting you through industries that you create to ensure that the jobs issue becomes high on the agenda, and therefore your targets would also match what the disbursements that you're making. So I'm not sure whether that is there's congruency in as far as that is concerned. I'm saying that's another area that perhaps you'd want to look further, so that if it means putting conditions, we do so. If it means giving thorough aftercare, that would ensure more job frustration, we do so. But what I'm saying is that we need to make sure that we create more jobs through our own industries that we are creating. Again, we are expecting dividends paid to the shareholder, main shareholder, which is the government, to increase, because you can see that we are really under threat, we are really under stress. We really expect you to do even more than what you are doing. I'm just worried that we still have companies. I mean, 1.3 billion is a lot of money to just write off. It is a lot of money. And while I understand through your report you're saying it's because you've applied whatever measure you could apply to try and save, but you couldn't. But then where I'm not satisfied is the fact that you're saying you could, where possible, make people to pay, but others are just left off. That's why I'm getting worried. People cannot just expect to get loans and then just disappear with the money like that. This is the people's money, even if whether it's from yourselves or from straight from government, you are the agent of government. So we're expecting that we protect every cent that we have. So I don't know, I'm not that convinced, but I still feel that funds lost through bad management, they need to be recouped. We cannot just say we're leaving them off because we cannot do anything. There are various means of doing that, and I'm sure that in your risk assessment of companies, there is something that you're keeping to ensure that you check, you know, the company's asset before you approve, so that you are able to recoup through other means in cases where you cannot get your money. So we shouldn't make it easy for companies to just, you know, rip the government off. If they are not ready to start businesses, if they cannot capacitate their structures so that they are able to safeguard whatever that the company owns, whatever assets that they own, I think we must be in a position to anticipate that as IDC and take action way before the company reaches that stage where they cannot even provide anything as a way of repayment. What I'm not clear, is it 1.3 billion in 2015, or is it two? Because here you are saying 2 billion in 2016. So does it mean that 1.3 is the preceding year? So I want to clear that, because in the report it's not quite clear. Also around skills, you know, I get worried when I read that we have a company coming elsewhere, we're giving that company a loan, 35% loan, actually we through our shareholding, means it's 35% of their total fund. And as IDC, you are holding that 35% as a shareholder in that company. And that company is a foreign investor with 65%. So it means South Africa in that company has only 35% and has no voice. That worries me. Because it means we don't have a say even if you want to ensure that more jobs are created, if the board says because they are in the majority, we cannot create more jobs now, it means they cannot because they're in the majority. Whether they take a decision to bring more people from abroad to here, you don't have a say because they're in the majority and they'll tell you how to run their company. Nobody else can tell them. And of course, they have a right to do so. Why can't we then put local shareholder so that we up our percentage share in that particular company? I'm just worried if we're going to leave things as they are and encourage people to come to South Africa and do as they wish. At the end of the day, even if they want to pack their things and go, it will be through a board decision, which is going to overwhelm us at the end of the day. How do we encourage investors to come to South Africa? Is it a good way of doing it? I'm not sure, and I don't think I agree personally. Maybe the committee can direct me there. But personally, I see it as a threat than as an opportunity. If we cannot match that which they are bringing and be able to say, yes, this is what we have, even if it means understudying them, sending people to understudy so that as they come back, they become shareholders to up our stake in that particular company, it would still serve South Africa well. But open, you know, so openly taking that risk, to me, it's a lot. We've done that previously with big companies in the country, and on top of that, we may say it's 35%, we may find that we are also incentivizing them because of the nature of the work that they are doing. At the end of the day, you may find that we're funding them more than what we have. So they have grants that they are enjoying at the expense of the country. And if we were to look at how much they're investing in the country, you may find that it's less than what we're investing in them. Is that how we're trying to improve South Africa? Is that how we're trying to develop local content? That's another thing. We are aware that the government is busy with looking at that area of incentives, whether they are serving South Africa or not. The fact of the matter is that we cannot go with open eyes and do that. I would want to recommend that personally, it's a suggestion from myself, not necessarily from the committee, that perhaps we need to put conditions on companies that we fund for skills development, on particularly on skills development. And then we recommend a percentage of skills that we'd want them to develop as a condition for our fund. We add that, especially from to foreign investors. Because if we don't do that, we won't transfer skills, and we won't develop more skills, you see, in the industries that we feel we're lacking on. So the other way of doing that is to force it. And how we force it is through those companies that we put money, and that we should serve as our carrot, so that we are able to force things. I don't know, because IDC is part of industrial development. I believe that as part of industrial development, you should also be concerned about skills development, and therefore you should be an integral part of skills development participants. So I feel, therefore, that you should develop ways of ensuring that there are skills in the market, so that as you develop those industries, they are already readily available skills to match that which you want to develop. Otherwise, you'll be funding companies that 3 to 4 years, 5 years on the line, they'll disappear because they wouldn't have what it takes to run those companies. When I look at clothing and textile, just to piggyback on what Ndate Clan was saying, I feel it's beyond funding. It's also about skills. Do we have weavers? How many people in our country are able to produce a cloth? Because it involves science. Do we have such skills? The very same machinery. Normally when you visit those plants that produce cloth, you find that they import machinery. Don't we have locally produced machines to do so? And from companies that we visited, it was quite clear that we can source such machines from our local companies. But is government, including IDC, able to identify such companies so that you fund them for that particular purpose? That is what I think it might be lacking from us, because we might also be failing our own industries that we are trying to develop. Whether it's through the value chain, steel industry or what, I don't know, but we need to be doing that. That would also go to the value chain that which supply the same weavers, because somebody has to produce the relevant material. If it's cotton, the cotton producers will have to supply. Are we supporting the cotton producers in the market, or in the industry, or we're just moving with time? If we really want to talk about clothing and textile, we cannot just talk about people who are sewing. We talk about from the beginning where the product, the very same producers of the material that would enable the last producer of cloth to be able to supply the market. That's where we're talking about. So you'll talk about the farmer down there, whether it's flex material or whatever, the marijuana plant, because I'm told that that some of this cloth comes from the root of the marijuana plant. How to ensure that we encourage, especially the people in the Eastern Cape, to continue producing that. The people in the Mpopo, Mpumalanga areas to continue producing cotton. Huh? Come again? Yes, but here I'm concerned about the textile and clothing material that we need to produce. So I'm saying if we want to look at that, we look at it holistically, so that when we say we develop the industry, we develop it in that fashion. To support. So I hope the chair and the CEO understand what, you know, the point I'm coming from. So that we see that meaningful funding strategy that you're trying to come up with. I had other questions that I had written here, but to for response. I think I don't have. I have questions that I have noted here, but for the sake of our time, I would allow the chair and the CFO and the head of strategy correct to respond, including others. I hear the risk manager, I mean the risk expert is here, chairperson of the risk management unit is here, would want to hear from you after we've raised this issue. Some as in a way of comments, some in a way of contribution, some are just clear questions. So can we hand over to you for responses?
Sure. Thank you so much. I think I'll allow the CEO to start and direct some of the more detailed questions to the members of the executive team. In terms of some of the more strategic questions, Lyle and myself will come back later.
Thanks, Chair of the IDC Board, to the Chair of the Committee and the members. Thank you for comments and questions, as I always cherish these questions because they help us reflect and see where we can improve, and we truly appreciate this input. As you said, Chair, right at the beginning, you're here to for us all to work together, and I think it's through these questions that we're able to do that, and the Chair of the IDC Board has given me permission to delegate, which is great. So everything and anything that has to do with agriculture, we have Lizeka Matsekga here. She's an expert, and in fact, she will tell us a bit more. So, Chair, we'll make a couple of, and then the rest, the CFO and the executive head and the manager in strategy will help. And maybe let me start, Chair. On a couple of them. On us improving in the regions, and I think the observation is clear, we need to improve, and we have a plan to make sure that the activity happens not only in Gauteng, some parts of KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape. So at the back of that, I'm spending, together with the regional teams, 2 days in each province to engage with the different stakeholders so that we can increase the level of activity. We've done Free State, we've done Mpumalanga, we've done Limpopo, we've done part of Eastern Cape because of its part, so we'll be doing that. So we engage with business, we at different sessions, we engage with the development finance institutions there, we engage with chambers because we want to get a sense from the chambers where the opportunities are, and in some instances some of the entrepreneurs, and then we also engage with the provincial governments so that we can really try and work and increase the level of activity, and also some of the government entities, for an example, the people who will be responsible for the land restitution, for an example, to see where the opportunities are. Because one area which we, in fact, we've put on the front to really ensure that there's enough focus on is on agriculture and agro-processing. And I think I'll leave that to Lizeka to talk about that. It's clear we have not performed well, although there are external factors, but internally we've been very critical. We could have done better. So that's why we've put it on there. And in fact, the board has actually emphasized that including the shareholder, that's that area. So we're really pushing. And I think if you look at in terms of the number of transactions to date, we actually more than what we had last year already for the whole year. So there is a push, but hopefully we can try and get those jobs and that's that. The proximity of CIFA to the IDC, even though it still reports to small business development, assists us in providing capacity. I think there's a point in terms of providing capacity. So we're doing that. In fact, if you look at the level of activity for CIFA, it has dropped a little bit because we were concerned with the level of impairments and write-offs at that level. So we said, let's go back and clean our book, because also the issue of pricing has been an issue which the Small Business Development, the portfolio committee in that has highlighted as an issue that we look at. So we, to ensure that we strengthen that, the chief financial officer, the CFO, and the chief risk officer, who is not here, are board members of CIFA, because we really want to strengthen that so that the activity is there. And we're worried about its sustainability. The reason why we deliberately also report on different parts, the loss, so that it's visible, so that we can really intervene, even though there is the grant that comes. I think the purpose of the grant is an appreciation that this space is more intensive. So if you hope that it can sustain itself, it's not going to be possible. It's going to take a long time. But also there needs to be some discipline that the grant is not, we not only rely on that, that we try more and more when to cover. In fact, one of the issues that CIFA has identified, which we have engaged now with different parts of government, was the ability to collect, particularly from people who have had contracts with different parts of government. And they battled because some departments did not allow for cession of accounts so that we can collect. And we found that some entrepreneurs did the work, took the money, but not paid CIFA. So that discipline, in fact, the CEO of CIFA has gone through today. But it's in our radar. It's very close. We're looking at that. We also have seconded the internal audit function there, the head of internal audit in CIFA, so that we make sure that we look at it. We are also a little bit worried because it has gone direct lending, and we have seen some challenges as it picks up on that, and that's why we're putting it on our radar. In fact, maybe Lael, as the non-executive and the chair of the board risk committee, can talk about it, because that's also one of the issues when the board audit and the board risk, it looked at all our risks, and they've also looked at the role that CIFA plays. Chair, the reference to having these major companies come in and then they withdraw, there was specific reference to GM. The specific response to GM from IDC, we did not have any relation with GM, so we did not bail them out or anything. The only entity we had was Ford, which is still in the country. We had put in R1 billion 5 years ago, I think, if not more. They repaid all of it. And in fact, as a result of that intervention, what you see now is the Ford Ranger, which has actually been very successful. IDC played a role because at that point they needed to decide whether they put the production here or they take it somewhere else. And with our intervention having come in and assisted, that decision was made to keep the production here. And we've seen that has helped. But I think the observation is indeed right that we need to be playing a role to ensure that we intervene, which is why the approach we took when BAIC wanted to establish that we will be shareholders in this, because we know the automotive companies normally come to a country because the country has incentives. But we said for this one, we will do it differently. We also want to be shareholders in that so that we can influence. Now, Chair, it has not been very obvious in our presentation that there are a number of rights which we've entrenched in this arrangement. Now, in fact, BAIC is the only OEM that has local ownership. All the others are foreign-owned. And in fact, that's the trend worldwide normally, because then they go to their mother countries. But this one, we insisted. Now, it's not only our money that goes in. They also are contributing, because the whole project in its entirety will be about $11 billion. So they are contributing. They're also bringing in debt into the company. We have put in a lot of requirements in terms of the level of local content. I will come back to the 60%, but also the labor that is there. I think when the project is done, about only 6% or so will be outside of South Africa. We're saying we use local people. We say people know how to manufacture cars. And this is one of the reasons why in some instances we have taken a little bit longer, because when we looked at procurement, we also insisted that you need to procure here. But there has been also a recognition from our side that we can't provide everything. In fact, the starting point was, if we can get it in South Africa, you buy it in South Africa. Now, but there's also the element of discipline that then we shouldn't then overpay, and people, the other parties must also come to the party. So there are some equipment, Chair, by their nature, that the South African industry will not be able to have them, because we don't have economies of scale, and we need to accept that, Chair. So we've tried to build as much as possible on this. Now, when you talk about local content, in fact, when the car is done, that 60% which you're aspiring for is actually the highest. In fact, what has actually helped, because we've spoken about this and the industry is not that big, so it knows, that is also, in an interesting way, triggered people like VW to look at increasing their local content. Because we do support some of the other component manufacturers, and there's been a number of them in the Port Elizabeth, East London area, where we've supported them at the back of the VW vehicles as well. We're having that conversation with Mercedes-Benz as well to see how best we can increase that local content. It's been very encouraging, Che. And it's not only just on the small Nyana parts and Metier and what. In fact, we're talking to them where even the bigger parts will be stamped here in South Africa. So there is really a concerted effort. In fact, we've even, for the bike project, we've even gone further and said, even management. So although the chair's observation is spot on, it's a 65-35, but we've built in a minority protection mechanism so that they don't just bulldoze everything. And I must say, tough the negotiations has been, but it's been a welcomed one. But even in the structure, IDC played a role in appointing the chief financial officer for the company. In fact, it's actually incidental, it's going to be a woman as well. So as much as they'll take the CEO, so we've appointed the CFO, so that we make sure that there's indeed a more balance of power. What we cannot avoid, Chair, is that when we want to invite foreign direct investment, that those companies that make a choice to come, they would want to have control in that. The discipline that we must put is that those key decisions and the minority protections are in place and are respected. We must agree right up front, because if you don't, then you have a problem. So we saw when bike was starting, Nantokozo did say it was in the media, that there's been a lot of attention in terms of where it's going and some of the challenges in terms of the workers were, so on the procurement issues, but we put our foot down. We said we'd rather be late in terms of actually producing the car and make sure that all the things that are right. So we've seen that the production schedule has actually moved, so we're hoping, let's say by the end of June next year, we should be able to produce the cars. No, the plant is still at, the first phase is still at early stages. In fact, I think I drove past there 2 weeks ago. I think the structures are all, the steel structures are there. So we think in terms of the production, we should have the first car by the end of June next year, if all things go according to plan, which is a delay. We thought it would be earlier, but we wanted to have that delay so that we can make sure that we fix all these issues, because we're worried about some of the procurement issues, which is why in the media there were those issues, particularly for the local entrepreneurs, where they felt they were being left out. And we need to be sensitive. And in fact, the board investment committee and the board of the IDC has put this project on its radar to ensure that the commitments that we've made, we are indeed able to deliver. Maybe the chair will talk about that. And then the last one I want to respond to, and then I'll leave the rest of the all the ladies to answer, is on the performance of Fosco and Sco. So maybe it was not very clear. Let's start with SCORE. The process is very advanced. In fact, the company has been broken into three. The first part, which includes the local partner, is actually lodged to the Competition Commission. There has been a first sitting. The other two parts where we could not get any local partners, we got international partners. Those discussions, because there's one part which is the grinding media and the other part which is the cast product. We've had the discussions with those partners are much more advanced now. In fact, in all probabilities, the grinding media will be the next one to be launched with the Competition Commission. There has been a delay because we had hoped by now, I mean, we would have concluded this, but we need to go through the process. In fact, we had thought we'd made significant progress with the grinding media, but then we had to renegotiate with the international partners. So there has been very significant progress. I think if all the competition issues are addressed properly, by the time we come with the plan next year, SCORE will not be our subsidiary in all parts of it, some parts of it, not all parts of it. In relation to FOSCORE, which I will also maybe ask Lyle to talk about that, because the board, in fact, for these two investments, decided that the board risk committee for FOSCORE and the board investment committee for SCORE do what we call a deep dive, where they actually went inside, understood it better, asked those difficult questions, understand what the plans are in terms of turning them around. It's at the back of that where $4 billion was approved for FOSCORE with the plans to turn it around. Now, just to remind the committee members, FOSCORE exports phosphoric acid largely to India, but to other countries. The main problem has been the Richards Bay plant, and I can say with that injection of capital, that Richards Bay plant is now producing. The next step is to look at how do we enhance on the mining side. The mining side is working well, but it's to look at for other markets. Now, as we speak, the challenge has been the price for phosphoric acid because we depend on that, so it's been low. The exchange rate, the weakening of the exchange rate, has sort of helped to some extent, but FOSCORE is not out of the woods yet, but it's receiving the attention that it deserves, because we do realize the amounts involved here are very, very significant. And in fact, so the board is really indeed sees, not only the board, even the shareholder, has looked into that. I said last, but Chair, maybe I forgot. With your permission, maybe Chair, at some point, it might be a good idea that maybe we take one sector, clothing and textiles, for an example, because there's a lot of things we're doing. And I haven't been to the DTI Portfolio Committee in a while, so I'm not sure whether they've done that, because the intervention is twofold, Chair. It's by IDC, but it's also by the Department of Trade and Industry. Because trade and industry is bringing in, we're looking after what we call the Competitiveness Enhancement Program, MSEP, which by its nature will not per company bring in a lot of money, because it's not looking at equipment, but it's looking at the processes and how you improve them. And then IDC brings in money for equipment. Now, if you look at our intervention, Chair, this is one sector which IDC is putting a lot of money. Naturally, if you compare this with a mine, the value will not be that obvious. But if you look at the jobs we've saved, this is one industry. Because we know that industry is key to this sector, particularly in the level of job creation. In the Western Cape here, but also in KwaZulu-Natal, there's a number of companies that we have. In fact, our collaboration with DTI has just been so good that we have been able to. The real issue is the modernization of some of these, but also the layout of some of these plants, which I would like to believe we've done. But also there needs to be an acceptance that there's niches that we need to capitalize on, because once you start talking low, big volumes and all of that, we've not been competing. But what the IDC team has done as well, Chair, on this sector, they've taken a step further by engaging with the retailers. Because what we found is that the retailers are the ones that make decisions, and they've been importing. But I must say we've seen good progress. I mean, people like Woolworths coming to the party, people like Mr. Price coming to the party through our own interventions. Over and above that, an initiative which we started a while ago was to work with National Treasury on illegal imports, because that was one part which we found was difficult, where people would under-declare, put in things and under-declare. So we put in money with National Treasury and we worked. But as we know, some people are always clever, but that's one area. So I would say maybe, Chair, we can unpack it a bit more so that we can show, even though when you look at the value, it might not be that obvious, but there's a lot of work that we did with that. In fact, we also looked at backward integration. The Chair spoke about Flex, where we spent a lot of money trying to see whether we can have opportunities of developing that. At this stage, Chair, the projects we started, we abandoned them because we couldn't find a sustainable way. The closeness to the hub that Mr. Pikinin, I think, referred to, is indeed a concern, because at face value, it's difficult for you to tell the difference. But we needed to make sure that there's the appropriate approvals. And we've been engaging backwards and forwards. We have not made as good of a progress as we could have. I don't think we can use Flex for a hub, but you can use the hub for other things. So, but it's one of those things that we are looking at to say how best we can use Flex. In fact, we have a plant which we had mothballed somewhere in the KZN area, which is sustainable fiber solutions. Where Kenneth, in fact, it's called Kenneth, where we wanted to maybe Lizega will talk about that, because we were looking at backward integration to say what raw materials can we bring. We looked at, there was another plant here in the Western Cape where we're looking at silk, I think. So, but we had to close some of those. So sometimes we had to make those tough decisions. In some of these companies, we end up owning them because we had put in loans, and we're not quick to close them. We really try and see whether we can sustain them, turn them around. But at some point, it's good to have Lyle, the chair of risk, because then she always asks us how long and how far can we go. But at some point, we have to do that. Chair, those are some of the questions. I was quite amused by the chair asking for more money as a dividend. But I'm sure the CFO will talk about that. Maybe Lael would want to start, and then we can go to the CFO, and then Nkululeko, and then Lizeka will. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, perhaps I can just start off by saying that it's really a pleasure to serve on the board of the IDC, because the IDC is an organisation that has taken its governance very seriously, and I think it is one state-owned entity where the governance has received a lot of attention. And I think one really appreciates also the skill levels of the management of the IDC. But the fact that the governance is something that has continued under the leadership of our chair to receive a lot of attention. And it makes it much easier to serve as a board member of the IDC. I also want to say that if I think about the role of the IDC, it's always a balance between the financial sustainability, which is crucial, because I'm told that the last time the IDC approached the state for funding was in 1956. So 60 years ago was the last time that the... Was there something in more recently? But the role of the IDC is to take those resources that I think, Chair, you have rightly said are the people's resources, as you put it. Those are collective resources of the country. And our job as the IDC is to deploy those resources in the best possible way. And that means that we need to sustain the organization financially so that we don't have to come to you and say, please, can you find money for us? We must be sustainable. At the same time, we need to use those resources in a manner that is not simply commercial. We want to make sure that we are sustainable, but we are not simply commercial. We are a development finance institution, and that is the balance that we continuously, try to achieve. The question of SCOR and FOSCOR and also CIFA, I think, should be understood in that context, that on the one hand, we cannot throw money and waste money. On the other hand, we must always think about impact. So as the risk committee of the board, we've kept quite a close eye on both SCORE and on FOSCORE and also on CIFA, because these are subsidiaries of ours which are losing money. I think on SCORE we have seen really quite a lot of good progress. As our CEO has already said, at least we have there divided the company into a number of different business units, which have all been now commercialized, and at least two out of the four are very well advanced in terms of finding the strategic equity partner that can come and put not only capital, but also expertise. So I think on SCORE, we are seeing progress, and it means that not only have we been able to save the jobs at SCORE and the industrial capacity at SCORE, but we will over time be able to get other partners to put some of their own capital into those businesses. FOSCORE, I think, has been much more difficult. FOSCORE is an entity that produces phosphoric acid, which goes into the fertilizer industry. So this is now something which services also the agricultural sector. The position of FOSCORE has been difficult because FOSCORE is naturally speaking at the higher end of a cost curve. At the same time, FOSCORE plays a role in terms of food security, in terms of regional development, because it has a big presence in Palabora and a big presence in Richards Bay. And it employs a lot of people. So as our CEO has just said, we try not to say, well, as soon as money is being lost, let's pull the plug. We try to say, how do we sustain? And I think with FOSCORE, one of the problems was that there had not been sufficient investment in the plant over a long period of time. So what we've said, we've adopted as the board a strategy which says let's try and invest in this plant so that it can actually be much more competitive internationally. But I don't want to, I think it was Amilcar Cabral who said tell no lies and claim no easy victories. FOSCORE is not something that we can simply say we are done, everything is okay. We are still experiencing significant cash losses there. And unless we are able to reduce those cash losses every year and eventually to stop them, we will have some very, very difficult decisions to make. But so far we have felt that there are so many jobs on the line, so much capacity, so much impact on the Palabora area and also the Richards Bay area, that to simply pull the plug would be wrong. We are a development finance institution and we must try to lift that entity. But we also, CEO said, the question we always ask is, to what extent? How far can we take them? How far can we carry them? Is it forever? It can't be forever. So we are really, as the risk committee, focusing on FOSCORE because that's the one where we are not seeing quite enough progress. On CIFA, I think we've definitely seen improvement. I think the idea of bringing CIFA into the IDC fold was also to try and ensure that the systems that the IDC has over many years developed can also be put to use in CIFA. So I think at CIFA we certainly have seen a stabilization. And now with the subsidy, of course, but the loss is minimal. However, we also know that government resources are scarce and we don't want to always rely that the subsidy will always be there. So we are also trying our best to improve conditions at CIFA. Perhaps the last comment I can make is in relation, Chair, to your point about write-offs and impairments. What we do as a risk committee, we keep a close eye on impairments as well as write-offs. So impairments are where we think that there's a risk of losses in future. And we really, once something is in the impairment category, we look at it very, very carefully at the management level and also at the board level to try to ensure that it's at risk, but it is not yet a write-off. By the time something gets to be a write-off, it is because we have knocked at that door as many times as possible. We have hammered that so that there is nobody that can simply take our money. It is true that we do have write-offs, and there have been some over the years, some large write-offs. But I'm very satisfied that there is a process in the IDC that something does not become a write-off prematurely, that we do not simply fold our hands and say, well, it's a pity, but we lost the money. We have got to always sweat every rand that we have. And with your permission, Chair, I'll finish also with a quote from, I think, a similar source, which was Fidel Castro, said many years ago that if you waste state resources, whether it is through wrongdoing or through simple inefficiency, it is as if you have stolen money from the poor, because state resources are generated not from some mystical source, but from the taxes that ordinary people are paying each and every day. Castro said, if you waste the resources of the state, it is as if you went into the homes of the poor at night and stole the sack of corn which they were keeping in the corner. We are aware as IDC that these are the state's resources. And the state is not an amorphous entity. It is the entity of South Africans. And whatever money we might lose, that money is taken from ordinary people. And therefore, we should do our level best to ensure that all of that money is invested correctly. Thanks, Chair.
Recouping before you write off. I have really tried your best in trying to recoup that those monies.
Maybe I can add on, Chair. We do, IDC has a unit we call Workout and Restructuring, which I'll link up to the question that was asked, I think, Ubabu January, it was Umama or Matlimbe, about the client they visited. We are a patient partner. I don't want to say an investor. And as a result, we would not close them down. Where we are with that project, we are at currently 95% commissioning, so it's just a small 5% that's left, and thereafter we start with the operations. But we're already proactively working with them to restructure the loan. I think the delays were due to them applying for a letter of credit from a bank in order for them to import the capital equipment they would have used to manufacture the cables. But IDC is a patient. I'm a product of Workout myself, so I'll talk with the experience. And as a result, when we take the decision to write off, you must have known IDC has done all it can to actually resuscitate the business, to recover. As CEO had said, there are people that you cannot avoid. They will take chances, but we also make sure that the legalities take into effect. It's when really you've tried all you have, the factors externally were beyond your control, that we eventually write off. But even in write-offs, we have a unit, once it's at Workout and they've done everything to work it out or recover from it, they transfer it to our legal department, of which within legal there's a unit or a section that looks after litigation. Therefore, we follow court processes. We have what we call a post-write-off recovery. So in that regard, yes, it might be a write-off, but it doesn't mean that there's a potential to recover. We cannot actually get post-write-off recoveries. It is because that's money we can also unlock. But we have strict processes.
All right, Chair, maybe on the write-off, just to add one last bit, is that you were questioning whether the numbers have gone up or down, and in fact, last year we wrote off 2 billion, and the process of litigation, as Lizaga has indicated, continues in the background, where we can recover either through the securities that were committed at the time of us entering into this contract. And the new financial year, which is 2017, we had to write off 1.3 billion. And even there, the processes, as highlighted, are continuing to see how much of that we can recover through the legal processes. So the numbers have reduced compared to the previous years, and we have a list of those that we are still chasing even after we have written off. Chair, I think a lot of questions that would have come my way have been covered, but maybe on the dividend, Chair, I did not mention the fact that with this performance, we did declare a dividend to the shareholder. And in comparison to the previous financial year, it is indeed a higher dividend, because even though in the previous year we had profits that were quite minimal at 200 million, we still believed that because IDC is still an entity that is around, let us, as a gesture of goodwill, declare 20 million rands, which we did. In this financial year, we have, Chair, declared 50 million rands. Now, I do want to add that in the context of a slide that we showed that talks about IDC's financial sustainability, in the board deliberating on the declaration of a dividend, the discussion is usually very much broader
than the amount that we declare, because for the developmental targets, we have quite significant and high targets that we've committed to the shareholder, which we had shared earlier in the year with the committee, where we said over as we move forward, our target would be to try and disperse as high as 100 billion going forward. And if you look at the disbursements of the current year at the levels of 11 billion, it indicates that we need to buff up or get financial resources from somewhere to be able to disperse to the levels of 200 billion. And we have then said, and this being supported by the board, that even if we do ramp up our disbursements to the levels of 100 billion or higher, we want to maintain the financial sustainability. So we would balance the declaration of a dividend at levels with the requirements that we would want to make sure we don't go back and say, shareholder, we want to disperse much higher, so assist, even with guarantees, not just cash injection. And the balance is between then saying, how do we utilize the profits that we've shared with the committee today, the matured investments, to basically plow that money back into the economy, as well as then the borrowings. Because, Chair, in terms of going to capital markets, we have a very good and open relationship with capital markets, but we are also trying to monitor that we do not increase our borrowing levels to the levels that would make the capital markets a bit uncomfortable about IDC's financial sustainability. So, Chair, you support me.
Chair, just in support of the CFO's input, the board would much rather our contribution to the fiscus is through taxes that are paid by the profitable businesses that we invest in, so that we can continue to disperse into the industrial economy of the country. So as the CFO says, we recognize we need to balance our financial sustainability and contribute to the fiscus, Chair, through profitability of the companies that we look after.
Those taxes represent the taxes or represent the actual dividend from your side?
So, Chair, okay. We have paid a dividend of 50. The tax are in addition.
Can you perhaps give us the annual contribution, including that which companies pay tax, so that we can see how important is ITC in this area? The other issue would be, how do you classify the different funds that are assigned to ITC to administer? And would you say the accountability is also done like any other business of the ITC is done, or is it done separately for government? Just to clarify.
All right. Chair, in terms of the funds that we administer, so we have an arrangement with government departments like DTI, where they've got grants, and what we then do in the context of balance of the IDC funding these entities, we look at the needs and the qualification of these entities that are coming from funding to the IDC, and a portion may well be that it is coming from our own funds, but we blend it with the money that may be coming from, say, the DTI as a grant. And that then assists the entity, if it's a grant or a better rate of interest that they would have to pay, to just assist them in being able to manage whether it's an interest payment, because as the IDC, we would have raised money from the capital markets and be paying interest, and at minimum, we try to recover the interest that we would have paid. Which is what we call a hurdle rate. We then say this entity requires support. How do we blend money from capital markets, money from our own funds, with the grants and other monies that we get from the DTI or from the government entities that we are already managing and that blending does assist. So if you look at things like MSEP and other monies that we get, they do assist to reduce the burden to the entities. Then they can really focus on ramping up their production than being stressed about how to repay and actually how their financials can carry the cost of the money. So we blend it with the IDC money many a times. Yes, so the governance in terms of administration processes, in fact, we've got a fully-fledged department that would make sure that we've got processes on how we receive this money, the timing of receiving it, and the accounting for it, and it gets audited, and those reports do go to the relevant departments.
So would that form part of income received for the year?
Chair, no. So in terms of the money that we keep for them, we call it in some instances the off-balance sheet. So in certain instances, we look after it for them, so but it doesn't even form part of our money. We just make sure that it doesn't lose value by just keeping it in some money market and to receive as much, you know, return as it can while it's not used. But we also have an arrangement with DTI where we've said we're not going to take this money when we don't need it. So they would look at the requirements and they disperse to us when they know that we're going to need it quite in the near future.
So the investment or tranche payment would be according to your needs?
Yes, Chair, in relation to what we are ready to disperse to the economy.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you, Chair.
I will take the agriculture questions. Thanks for the opportunity. I'll start with the Doringbay abalone project. And maybe just to give context about it, it is a project that's situated 360 kilometers north of Western Cape in the West Coast region. It is in an area, I think it's got about 1,200 people. It's a community that's purely dependent on fishing industry. So this project is really then at the hub of the economic activity. It's also a community, I think, that had one of the larger companies having set up, but they've since closed Oceana Group because of the tariff and the quotas. As a result, this is really, this project is the largest employer in that region. It's a project IDC partnered with the Western Cape government whereby I think 37% is community-owned, of which 650 beneficiaries. So I'm just trying to make the linkages. It's 1,200 people. 50% of them are the direct beneficiaries of this project as shareholders. It's a project that started as a small scale. We know abalone is needed in the east, mainly China. And as a result, there's a middleman, which is the larger commercial farmer, if I can call it that, aquaculture. But as IDC now, the exposure, it's about 10.4 million rand, so it's very small. But one thing we've realized, we need to cut the middleman. We need to actually graduate them into the mainstream of the economy. As a result, we are looking at expansion now. That expansion would have an element of skills. It will have an element of technical partners for them to actually graduate and go directly to the markets, and because the margins will be much greater if they happen to go directly. So that's something that we're working on now. So that 10.4 million will actually increase perhaps three times as we go through the expansion phase. Luckily, it's a product that's in demand every, I think, almost daily. The abalone is really in increase. On the, and maybe just to expand further, of the employees, which is about 44 employees, so the beneficiaries are on the shareholding side, but the direct employees, there's 44 of them, of which 67% is youth. And of which of that 44 people, 36% are female. And I think one member did say that when women are there, you see traction. So we hope that we could actually walk the journey with them, and I think it's aligned to our, this is the unit, I think Nontokozo was highlighting, is one of the value chain. It's important in South Africans' life because we know it's got a jobs-rich industrialization opportunity. But we also are quick to concede as the corporation that we have not done what we thought we should be. And I'll highlight that towards the end, what it is that we're doing differently. But we also besides the community, we also have a BE shareholder who is part of this project. It's a local businessman, so he understands the local environment, and because some social issues do tend to come up, but he's able, we have not had such issues because it's people from the same area who understand the local environment. On the Karoo Catch, and I think as a value chain, it cuts across all value chains as per Project Evolve. That's why we repositioned ourselves. We wanted to come in early stage because then we are able to identify and walk the journey. If we think there's an issue with the policy framework, as IDC being proactive, we go to government and unlock those hurdles. So Karoo Catch is perhaps the best example to illustrate where IDC came involved very early stage at what we call a development stages, which goes through scoping, feasibility, bankability. We then concluded the bankability feasibility study in 2016. So now in March 2017, we now implemented a project that we've walked the process in terms of developing. In this regard, we've approved 68 million rand. It's in Graaf Reinet. It is to do what we call catfish. It is an aquaculture. So all both of the projects are aligned to government's objective of blue oceans economy, which we know that's really where the largest jobs lie. It's got 68 employees, of which, again, here, these employees were actually part of the development because we needed to prove to the people that buy the catfish that we can actually produce. They've now been taken on. They form part of the 210 jobs that will be created. We've already been trained, so linking to your point of skills development, Chair, they've gone through the foundational training, they've attained NQF level 1, which for us, as they then get exposed, they will go through the next levels. So as I said, both of these projects talks to really what the value chain is about. But I think there was an issue around, maybe I got to understand, what are we doing? Because most of these towns are dependent on local communities to supply them, and I use the Dorinbai. It's small fishermen. Sometimes they do it as subsistence, but how do you graduate them to make it commercial? For us is to ensure that as we process, we then bring in the raw material, and through doing that, we actually graduate them to be commercial farmers, and they actually make good profits out of this whilst creating jobs. On the, maybe as a last part from my side, what it is that we're doing, it is an area that's really preoccupying ourselves all the way from the shareholder, because as I said, we understand the impact. I think as a country, we recently got out of the technical recession purely from an agriculture. So it again reaffirms the importance of this sector in our lives as the country. As a result, for us, I think Nontokozo touched on it, backward integration is very important. We will not replace land bank. I think we have to be mindful. We cannot replace them. We have to coexist. Where we think they are not reaching, I think it's the role of IDC to go that deeper. And I want to use maybe the red meat value chain as an example, and that talks to the Eastern Cape. A lot of abattoirs had closed, and they closed because there was not a security of supply. IDC now, together with Land Bank, we are looking at feedlots, purely primary cattle, but we will ensure that the processing side has full capacity. So that's some of the examples we're doing. So Eastern Cape, for us, we think that's where the focus should be on agriculture. I think CEO spoke about the regional roadshow he does, and he came back confirming our assessment that Eastern Cape, huge opportunities are needed. And I think for me as an executive, I also have the industrial infrastructure. I've got the new industries, which talks to technology. So I'm best placed to understand the challenges of this sector and what it is from an infrastructure I need to do. So I'm looking at cold storages, I'm looking at grain silo storages, and it's in through those you can actually expedite the introduction of black entrepreneurs, because if you need to be a commercial farmer, you have to have access to storage and to make sure that if you have yields, good yields in maize, you don't sell at farm gates, and that I think that's the challenge of black farmers. So you need to store so that when the price is right, you sell. So those are some of the things we're working with government and the agri-parks and the SEZs, and agriculture is at the center of that. And I think Free State, one member didn't want to say it, but I could see she probably wanted to say about, oh no, it was Mr. Janwar, on
there are provinces where we may be not doing as we should be, and Free State is probably at the bottom of that. And I think this is the sector that will hopefully next year, if I get the opportunity to come back, I will report that there's been a significant improvement. I can safely say now, since the beginning of the financial year, we've approved 5 projects, all of them in the agriculture and agro-processing space, which is poultry, closer to the market. We are looking at in the infrastructure, but it's got direct linkages to the supply, sweet sorghum, which you ferment and you come up with gas. We have an offtake of that gas. It's in the Free State. So I am preoccupied, and I think we're actually on the right path. And CEO knows that we need to make huge inroads. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Chair, maybe you will. It's not every day I delegate apart. There was a question by Mr. Clean to say the leadership when we're looking at black industrialists. What is our? Maybe I think it would be better if it comes from yourself, Chair.
Chair, I did indicate that I'm pleased that management is here in person because they must make the commitments and they must come back and account, Chair, on how far we are in terms of the commitments that they are making. Lizaga especially. Lizaga looks after sectors that have great job creation opportunity. And, Chair, the last strategy session, which was just a few weeks ago, she was given a mandate, I think all the executives, but particularly in her area, to go upstream, downstream, as far as possible, so that we start improving also, Chair, in terms of our implementation of this value chain approach, and we'd like to see more tangible improvement. Chair and honorable members, one of the kind of catchy phrases that we were using at the strategy session or highlights was that the expectation and the need of our people is so great that we must keep doing more. So we can't just sit back and say we've done well and start relaxing. The need and the expectation is so great that we must keep doing more at each point. And I'm saying this in an attempt to try and address our impact with respect to small, medium enterprises and with respect to black inclusion, inclusive growth. We recognize, Chair, that we can continue to improve. I think we've shown improvement, especially since the board has started putting specific KPIs in place, measuring how much funding we're dispersing to women-owned companies, youth-owned companies, black-owned companies, and the small and medium enterprises. And we keep improving those measurements as we go forward. We've seen significant improvement in the past year or two, and we will continue to sharpen, Chair, especially around jobs created. We'll continue to sharpen our measurement, and we've also strengthened the mandate to the value chains where we believe that there'll be most impact. So, Chair, we expect to see much more improvement on those France. I couldn't agree more, Chair, on the issue of skills, and I'm pleased that Liz Zaga has made a live example of how we can add value to skills creation in the country. The CEO informed me that I think it is Bike, Chair, that has actually hired a South African to go and run one of their international manufacturing businesses. Was it Bike? Was it Mercedes-Benz? That has taken local expertise to go and run, is it a German? Or the Chinese manufacturing concern. So That shows the potential that we have in the country, Chair. And my response to the CEO was that we need to continually fill that pipeline. It's a double-edged sword when we see international companies taking from our own. You know, on one hand, we take it as recognition of the depth, but on the other hand, we recognize that then there's that capacity that needs to be filled by ourselves. Chair, I think I will pause there, hoping that we've tried to address more rather than less of the questions that were posed by the members.
Sorry, Chair, there's one on the aeroplane. Why did you, I thought the CFO was going to talk about it. So why did we sell the aeroplane? So, Chair, we always try and see whether we're getting value for the investments that we make. So when we had an aeroplane, which is it was a 9-seater, and particularly when we were developing the rest of the continent, it was and going to some of those rural areas, it was very useful, and we were able to use it. But as there's been a pickup on using the public side of transport, as I call it, which SAA is one of them, we did not use it to the ability, and as a result, we didn't want just to keep it there for prestige or anything. So that's why we sold it. In fact, and we did recover. It's actually left IDC, and I think we sold it. It was bought by an international person in the U.S. somewhere. So it's been sold. It was a 9-seater because we're not using it as much. In fact, it was starting to cost us more to keep it.
Mavika. Ucabanga kuyobheka ngayo ukuthi basambise lapha. Opportunity lost.
And sorry.
Kanjani? No, we're producing for, we are supplying other countries. Sinayo iplant lapha ePitori. Hayibo. Okay, safuna ngohambise kancane. Akaboni.
There's one last question which okay. PWA will address the issue of what are we doing in the rest of the continent to improve our performance. Thanks.
Thank you, CEO. What we realized in the last year, trade between South Africa and the rest of the continent, I think there was about 300 billion worth of capital goods and services that went to the rest of the continent. So our team, Zondogozo, and the research and information team has been spending a lot of time analyzing what kind of capital goods being exported into the rest of the continent to also give us a sense of the kind of support that we need to provide to those sectors or industries that are proactively exporting capital goods into the rest of the continent so we can provide the appropriate products to support the export of South African capability into the rest of the continent. The team has also been preoccupied in unpacking what South Africa means to the rest of the continent and what the continent means to South Africa. And this is finding expression in, obviously, in the strategies that the value chains are developing. By way of an example, perhaps this would flatly fall in Lizaga's space. The continent is a net importer of rice. So if IDC and other parties are to make an impact in terms of, in as far as developing the commercial capability of rice growing on the continent, it would be how do we help reverse that such that Africa grows and commercializes its own rice on the continent as opposed to importing it from the East. So those are some of the value chain opportunities that Lizaga, together with other partners external to IDC, are looking at. And those are the kinds of funding opportunities we would be looking to proactively support going into the future and hopefully then improve our performance outside of South Africa on a more proactive basis in a way that supports South African industry but also develops capability on the continent as well.
Chair, on the local content, I think the question was on bike. So what I said was the 60% level that we have for that, that's for the automotive side, that's the highest that we can find. Which is why I said because of that, we've actually prompted the VWs of this world to also increase that up. Because we said, we looked at where they are on average. In terms of if you look at a car, what's the level of the local content? And which is why we've packed it at the 60% to try and really up the bar. We said minimum, but I mean we can try and go as much as possible. So once we, in fact, the plan is once we've done, because we're going to do phase one and phase two, so once we're doing phase two, where now the car is predominantly produced from South Africa in the bike project that we own 35%, we want that minimum to be 60%. So we will test it when we go to phase one to see where we are, and then in the second phase. So this talks to, I think, Lizega or Nontokos, I'm not sure who now, said, As part of the skills, I think it's this, they're developing a plant like an industrial park also close by with the bike project, which is another leg of this bike project to ensure that we have as much of the products that are produced locally. In fact, as part of the plan, what they will do once they've identified some of the black entrepreneurs, they'll actually be exposed to the Chinese way of doing things so that they can see. Some of them will actually go into China, but that's going to happen at a later stage, so that they see what is it that they require, so that then this issue of saying we want something but we can't find it here, but there are those entrepreneurs within the proximity of the plant itself. I think it will be achievable, Chair, because there are a number of component manufacturers already that we fund as IDC, and there's potential for us to increase, because the challenge has been, well and good, we have the component suppliers there, but how many of those are actually black or black entrepreneurs? And we've been proactively trying to ensure that we increase that.
Okay. Yeah. More and more challenges. More and more challenges. But I think the path to where we're heading to is quite clear, and we can improve perhaps there and there so that we make a meaningful, the meaning of our situation. The issue where I thought I should also come in is on the issue that was raised by Matsimbi. I think the project there, while I understand the response, the challenge is around the fact that they don't have a space. They are renting the space. At the same time, they have invested so much in that space that they are renting. So it's a matter of whether we're staying or we're moving. And if we're moving while we just occupied, are we not going to lose? So I don't know how can you assist them, but the fact of the matter, at the end of the day, they cannot keep up with 200,000 rentals per month. It's just too much. If you can't pay a year, it's about 1.2 million just on rental. That doesn't make economic sense. So I think it's something that we can perhaps try and help them. The decision has been made, which I don't think it was a very good decision, the business decision. But they're youngsters, they're growing. This is something they learn from, something that we could be able to assist them. You can see the passion in them. You can see, you know, they do have a business acumen. You can see because they know they have a vision. The only thing that I have a problem with South Africa is that as much as we invest in so much in our local people, but businesses or firms, we do not do the job up to the end. That's where she was coming in to say, yes, at the end of the day, they would do that. Do they have the market? can they compete with the established firms? That's another thing. Yes, they might be getting there and there with Siemens and so forth, assisting them, but there'll come a point where Siemens see them as their competitor. Are they going to be able to assist them still at their own peril? They might not. So at the end of the day, we as South Africa also want to see them competing with companies. This is just an example. It's a way of an example. There are so many examples we could be giving. Then your head of IDC in Gauteng, for instance, what is he or she doing to ensure that those such companies are helped? Similar example can be given with Mpumalanga in the steel sector. There's downstream also there, but the fact of the matter is, and the value chain issues around that, are we able to assist? We were not happy, for instance, as a portfolio committee to get to Middleburg, and we want to ask questions, and the head of IDC is also asking the same question. When we should be getting answers from the head? Does it make sense? And it's something that we have to deal with, because it's not the first situation that we came across. We go to provinces, when we get there, when we're supposed to be getting answers from the IDC, we're getting questions, IDC questioning companies, when they should be knowing in the in and outs of companies. You see? So that's why I'm saying IDC must begin to look at the people in the provinces, see whether you have the good material, or you invest more on their management and other skills. Because sometimes Babu Kena will understand when we went to Limpopo, we'll find somebody who's just greater than the people themselves. You see, and yes, you might be earning a lot of money, you might be having those suits or whatever, label suits, whatever, but it's not for you to go and post for people there. You're supposed to be serving the people, not posting for people. People don't care about what label you're wearing. They care about the service that you're giving them, because that is what you are employed to do at the end of the day. So those are the type of people that we need. People like you. I mean, you are here, you are humble, you are able to explain, to account, to do what. This is what we want to see filtered through to that level, so that you, because those are your ambassadors. If your ambassadors cannot do, this is what we see, we think what is happening in the IDC is that which we see. So that is the only criticism I think we can put to you. As an institution, no, I'm not talking to you. It's responding, but I'm talking to you. Okay, sorry. Yeah, those are the things that we feel that they might look minor, but they're very, very, very important, because even a poor guy says, this form that I'm seeing, very good. You know that guy's what he's doing there in Middleburg, out of the steel that he's buying from Columbus Steel. Producing, you know, the gas price, whatever, lots of things, ne?
Kitchen utensils.
Yes, even kitchen utensils. But that guy has been applying for money from the work that he's doing. I wish you can go there. Look at the work that he's doing. He says, I have forms, and this form wants me to give them what? I don't know what is that. All I care about is producing this. I need. What I know is that I need money to continue to do what I'm doing. The person has money. I mean, has skill, but they don't have, you know, they don't have that kind of background. We even said, why can't IDC we recommend to the guy to appoint a financial person? You know, just those skills, you know, teach the person to run a business. The pricing, I mean, where do you get such fully stainless steel thing with 5,000 rands? How does that person make money out of that? That's another work that the IDC should be looking at. Even if it's CIFA, whether it's IDC or CIFA, but at that level you'd expect that IDC would come in. So these are some of the things that we think the workers, government or parastatal workers, do not understand about our people. So that we need to really fill in those gaps as institutions like yours, so that we help them, because they might not come with those big English or whatever, but they might be knowing the work. How do you then assist them to do their work and employ people who can be boardroom people, because they are not interested in this boardroom work? Yeah. I thought I should just pass that on, but really, as usual, we want to thank you so much, and not just thank you for coming and being able to present and respond to our questions, but for the work that you're doing, you continue doing, to make us proud. We know situations might not be as easy as they used to be, but we're looking up to you to grow this economy through those industries that you going to be developing. If there are new innovations, help our people to access and to understand. Partner with OCSIR, partner with the innovation centers, because we've seen the work that they are doing, and we know that through your partnership we can grow South Africa's economy. Thank you so much for your dedicated work. Yes. I think we are a bit late now, it's past one. We're supposed to be on lunch now. Members are going to, of the study group, my study group, are going to remain. we have a business, I don't know where it's lunch. The rest, I don't know if you still, Ninangnaz Ningajemzin, Bantubaga IDC. Something that we need to talk about. Anidlemzini kodwa nifuna thina masize IDC sihle. Ufuna kunikhomba njengelilanga. Eh? Babukhena uzabo prepare yonke lento iprepareile sothi siyabonga so the next door. Angifuni labanye bangizwe, ngifuna just sikhulume ngesintu so that sizozwana thina. Eh? Angikhuluma ngawe esikhathini esiningi uche akekho uwo khona. Ehe. Next time. Okay. Those who want lunch, Bob Mabika and others, the lunch is prepared at V8. V8.